It's Miami Vice Cast. I'm Lieutenant Martin Castillo, and joining me as always are Sonny Crockett and Rico Tubbs. Keep me informed, guys.
Were you watching Rockford last night? There was this guy on there. He was like perfect, and I mean, in 5 years it'll be on, but that's okay. I saw it last night.
You belong to the city. Concrete under your feet.
Oh, hello. I was just recording an atmospheric music montage.
Stop. Jan Hammer time.
I remember that episode where Pavarotti guested on Miami Vice. It was amazing.
This is actually now, I know you're confused. I got my Miami Vice mixed up in my Magnum podcast. No, it's Magnum podcast, and I'm Jason Snell in there, David J. Lohr, and Philip Michaels. But
these are two great tastes that do not taste great together.
I was brought to my, I bumped my head and went into a fugue late in the episode. We watched Tigers Fan Season 8. Season 8, Episode 4, Season 8. I yelled at the screen several times, Season 8!
Yep.
Where you go into a fugue as Magnum begins.
Tom Selleck's gift to the cast. Well, it's not a gift to us.
Yeah, it was, hey, let's spend some time tailing a guy and going on a boat and shooting off some machine guns and all set to an atmospheric. What we're going to do is we're going to mic post lay down like an atmospheric synth track with an occasional bow, bow of a mournful electric guitar like they do on Miami Vice. And that's why this episode is very much like a middle-aged man dressed up like a 20-year-old. It's Tigers Fan.
And I have written down, during the atmospheric 3-minute montage, did they forget that we watch this for the narrations and not the music?
I think they were trying some stuff because the state of the art of this sort of TV show had moved on. And Magnum is already a show that's a little bit of a out of its time a little, because it is in many ways more like a 70s detective show than it is like the stylish mid 80s shows like Miami Vice. But here it feels like they're going out, right? They're going out. Their ratings are down. This is the last season. They're not coming back. I don't know why they stoop, honestly, another show.
Maybe they got some notes from the network. Maybe someone wanted it on their clip reel. I don't know.
I think that's the most likely thing is that they wanted something to show for their next job. Yeah.
Which was ironically at Miami Vice. But
and when you look, like when I saw the credit written by Bruce Chervy, and I went, okay, I know what I'm in for. So it's not going to be good. But, you know, you look at his other episodes like Way of the Stalking Horse, Death and Taxes, and they all have the same, like, we really want to be Miami Vice. It's a little bizarre. And Magnum is out of character, and everybody is a little tougher and angrier. And it's odd. It's not just the music and the direction. It's in the script.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an episode that is, I don't want to say that it's no fun, because there is a subplot in it that is a lot of fun, but the main plot is not fun. It's kind of, it's just a dull grind.
Unpleasant. It does terrible things to a beloved character.
Tonally off all the way from start to finish. Because Magnum isn't like a gritty detective show. Magnum is he's a fun guy who mooches off a mysterious book writer and solves crimes when he gets around to it. That's what Magnum should be. It shouldn't be I'm sad now and going to go on a 3-minute music montage looking for clues. Someone cue the Phil Collins.
Yeah. I'm going to follow the guy who did all the ads for Pathmark grocery stores.
Oh,
that's
really
what I'm going to do. Yeah. Yeah. James Caron was the Pathmark guy in the Northeast for like 20 years.
Well, here he's a crooked doctor with a taste for hookers. Yes. Yeah. Magnum PI. Yeah.
Come on down to Pathmark. This week, King Arthur Flour on sale for $1.98 for a 5-pound bag. Pathmark, your shopping experience matters.
That flour
I
is
love
a,
hookers.
That flour is in a bag, but it's not blow, everybody. It's not, not a cocaine taken from the burial locker of a police detective.
This week our cucumbers are free, and I'm going out with the hooker, Pathmark.
All limes on sale, 5 for $1. Pathmark, come on down.
Here's what happens in this episode. we start with a scene that seems like it's going to be a flashback, although it turns out to be a dream sequence. Some guys are talking. They're talking about Watergate. They mention that Lance White guy on Rockford.
Oh. You know, that's why it's okay that they mention Rockford in 1973.
That's right, because it's a dream. It's a dream,
it's dream logic of Tanaka
in the present, so he's using his love of the Rockford Files and his sneaking suspicion that Lance White is
that
somehow related to
like
Thomas Magnum. and then there's like a double cross, and there's lots of guns, and those guys die. Some of those guys die.
And this guy is about to shoot him, and he looks, you know, right in the camera, because suddenly we realize, oh, we're actually a point of view, which isn't obvious until then.
Those classic Magnum takes to the camera, whether it's a wink or a raised eyebrow guy shooting you.
It was just Tanaka all the time. So Tanaka wakes up in a sweat because this has been his dream. Lieutenant Tanaka has been on a bunch of episodes, apparently. And you're thinking, oh, yay, Tanaka's going to be in this one. And then as the next few minutes unspool, you realize, oh, we are slowly watching Tanaka march to his death. We get a voiceover from Thomas Magnum about baseball and how great baseball is. It's kids playing baseball. This is the team that TC coaches. It's set. They shot these baseball scenes at a park. Kind of over by Diamond Head, and it's a great setting. I'm not sure if there was actually a baseball diamond there. It looks suspiciously like they put dirt in the shape of base paths to make it seem like they usually play baseball there. My understanding, it seems to be that it's just a field, not a baseball park, but I don't know. Maybe it was in the 80s or not. It looks kind of fake, but it doesn't matter. It's a gorgeous location. I'm a big fan of baseball diamonds in wacky, wild locations, and having the outfield kind of back up on the ocean with Diamond Head in the background, pretty good.
Yeah, a long fly ball to right field is going to get caught up in that current that takes you to Alaska.
And all
I'm all in favor of that.
All the foul balls are going in the water, everybody. Mm. All the foul balls. Yeah. So a kid is rounding the bases, and I, as an eagle-eyed baseball fan, noticed that kid, who we will learn is Biff, missed second base. And I think, silly show, that kid missed second base, until it is pointed out in dialogue that he did miss second base. And I thought, okay, good job. You had the kid not touch second base. It's in the script. And Tanaka is there just because his nephew is Biff, is the kid on the team. And then Tanaka doesn't really need anything from Magnum. He's like, hey, you need anything from me? And Tanaka's like, no, I don't. At which point, that seems kind of, well, why is he even there? And the answer is, it's the last time Thomas will see him alive, because we now get a series of very serious kind of cross-cut things of a regular Magnum P.I. episode kind of going on while Tanaka is going through
his Miami Vice episode is going on already.
Yes, Tanaka is doing his Miami Vice episode.
I get the feeling that Tanaka was there because he was trying to fish Magnum into his crazy scheme of getting the, because a couple of guys like us, Magnum, doing adventures, doing a thing, and Magnum is totally distracted with yelling at TC and doesn't pick up what Tanaka's throwing down. I can understand you overlooking this, because there is no point, again, that the script revisits this, where Magnum has this, oh my God, he was trying to get me to come with him. He's dead because of me.
Yes, there that doesn't happen.
No,
nothing in this script makes any sense.
No,
it really doesn't connect.
As we go through it, I have several moments where I'm going to. It's what I like to call. I'm going to introduce it now in advance. This is a groundbreaking. This is episode 50 of Magnum Podcast. I'm breaking ground here. I'm going to introduce a segment that will be coming later, which is called "I Watched This Twice and Still Don't Understand It." Do you?
I did too.
I as well watched it twice. My God, it's the rare triple double decker Magnum PI episode.
I didn't watch it sequentially twice, as to say that there were many points where I basically backed up 5 minutes to see if I missed something important. So I ended up watching the episode twice while trying to pour over it to understand it. And friends, it didn't help.
Nope. And while we're still in the baseball scene. And Tanaka has the line about rounding third and all this.
Yep.
That one line has the strangest interior echo. It's, again, great ADR.
Yep.
But
yeah.
Go and listen to
there's
it.
Some
it's
real...
just suddenly he's indoors in a tin can.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of really good ADR in this in this whole series. So as we're flashing through Tanaka doing his whole... testing drug powder and like meeting with a guy, and then he gets shot.
We see that the guy who comes in to join them is the guy who was gonna shoot him in the dream flashback,
and he recognizes him and he tries to turn away, but it's too late. He's recognized, and then he's like, "We'll kill him, boss," and he's like, no, I'll kill him, and they kill him. I want to talk about the other scene, because the other scene addresses something that we've only touched upon briefly, but not really seen in an episode that we watched, which is the Robin Masters theory.
Oh God!
This is in the era where Magnum has decided that Robin Masters is a front, and while he exists as a person, all of his novels are actually written by Higgins. This comes up, and I enjoy. TC says, "Oh, the Robin Masters theory," and rolls his eyes. And I say, "Yes, TC, yes, you are correct. I've seen them both together," says Rick. "Yes, Rick, yes, correct." Thomas is like, no, I can explain. And Rick says, what I think really defines everything about the Robin Masters theory. He says, "Yuck." Yep.
So what you're saying, Jason, is you've had it with this Robin Masters madness.
That's right. Let's add it to the list of things that TC has had it with. Rolling eyes says it all. Says it for all of us. This is really dumb.
Yes. Now I will say, and I don't like the Robin Masters theory at all, but I had forgotten this. Thomas's idea that Higgins couldn't bear living the life of Robin Masters and all because he didn't want to be like his father. He didn't want to be a playboy like his father. And I was like, all right, that's fair. That's not a bad insight. The rest of it is absolute garbage.
Trying really hard. It has the whiff to me of somebody pointing out that it makes no sense, this theory, and saying, we'll hang a lantern on it, and then I'm going to explain why. And it's like, no, it still doesn't make any sense.
Also, Thomas asserts this theory with the smug confidence of a man who see like it's QED. Like my ironclad logic has proven your logic proves nothing.
And Higgins,
I think they should revoke Magnum's PI license if this is how he reaches conclusions.
So Higgins shows up, and what he says is, "Oh well, I mentioned your theory to Robin," and Magnum is suddenly like, "You mentioned it to Robin?" He's like, "Oh yes, what?" He's very interested in talking about it to you when he's here next. And it's a very funny way for Higgins to put Magnum back. I was like, "Oh, it's fun. You're going to tell our employer that you think that I'm ghostwriting his books for him." Okay, good luck, Magnum. But there's a nice bit of timing. All the good things that are in this episode involve our regular cast interacting with one another in various ways. So there's a nice little moment in here where there's like a fast exchange of dialogue, which is like, what's going on? What are you doing? What do you have? They're asking all a bunch of fast questions. I liked that. Meanwhile, Tanaka is getting killed. Higgins has soil out of a Chinese puzzle box and... whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Making tea in honor of his long lost love, Lady Ashley, which he will then rename Silver Tanaka.
Mm-hmm.
And okay,
yeah,
whatever.
So after the guy recognizes Tanaka and kills him, Magnum gets the phone call. It's Paige, who is Joe Santos from the Rockford Files. He's in those Lance White episodes of the Rockford Files with Tom Selleck, or at least one of the two. And so there's all the Rockford Files connections here are fast and furious. Tanaka is dead. And so
never,
we go to his funeral.
I gotta say, I never liked Lieutenant Page as a character. It never was like, what, you already have a good cop character. Why are you bringing in Joe Santos? Nothing.
Well, because they knew they were going to kill off Tanaka at some point.
Eventually.
It feels to me very much like they were running out of episodes and they wanted Tanaka back one last time, and why not kill him off?
Yes, because apparently this is only the third episode that Joe Santos was in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like he was in more than just those, but we watch him out of order, so what do I know?
Yeah, and he's got the hat in this episode. He's wearing the hat, of course, commemorating Frank Sinatra's appearance in his last episode, Laura. Because hats.
The death of Tanaka.
Yep.
I realize this goes against my whole ethos as of Magnum as a lighthearted show, but... You know, this is a fairly beloved secondary character.
Yep.
And his death is handled basically, essentially off camera. We don't, as much of an afterthought as you can have it. And I thought, wait a minute, we're just, Mac is basically in a handful of episodes. Magnum goes off the deep end for that. And here, Tanaka, who's been with us for 7+ years.
Yep, 26 episodes.
At this point,
26 episodes dispensed with, you better clock out. We don't want to pay you overtime.
Well, I didn't read it that way. My complaint would be, that I get that you can have real stakes when you're in the last season of a show and you can kill off supporting characters for dramatic purposes because you weren't going to use them anyway. And yet, part of me thinks that you know, as a fan of a show, as a viewer of a show, you like the idea that these people are living on and having their adventures or whatever.
Right.
And it's just kind of a sour taste when you take a character who's a genial, happy member of the ensemble and murder them because you can, because it manufactures a plot for a week. And I get the freedom of wanting to do it, but like, if you're going to kill off Lieutenant Tanaka, you should probably have a good reason for it and have it be a good use of Tanaka. And instead... Yeah. What they're going for here is this sort of wistful, like, oh, we misconnected in that moment on the baseball field, but it turns out that he went off and died, and he was obsessed with this thing. But like, even then, we don't get to really see him in action because it's kind of a dialogue-less montage.
Right.
Yeah. There's no explanation as to whether this is an official undercover thing or it's not. And he doesn't seem like the type to go off the reservation, as it were.
You're not supposed to say that anymore, David.
I'm not supposed to say that anymore either,
I would say, like the idea that maybe Thomas should be blaming himself for not being there for him, something that is not, you can see the shape of it in the script, but then it's not in the rest of the script. I think it's also true that there's probably... you know, there's that jerk police guy who's like, hey, where's that? Hey, there's the kilo of cocaine that's missing, right? And there's like, oh, it's in his desk drawer. Oh, okay. We'll get to that in a little
bit.
None
of which made sense.
But my segment is coming out very soon about that. But that's it. They could do a thing where there's an attempt to do character assassination on Tanaka and then they have to rehabilitate it. But it really just happens in one scene and is blown over. And again, it's sort of like, well, why? Why did you structure it this way if you were not going to commit to doing that either?
Right. Why did we even bring it up if you're just going to go, oh, hand wave, done.
Yeah.
All
I'm saying is they killed him off like Doc Eyeballed and when he deserved a Tanaka-style death.
Yeah.
Like and if they ever kill off Agatha Chumley, I want it to be brutal and on screen and last 5 minutes.
And they have to do a
thing at the end where they bring on the Gillian Dobbs and say, no, I'm just an actress. I'm really alive.
Well, and you know, especially Magnum with all of its flim-flammery about like premonitions and things like that. Also, all of its sappy flashbacks. I'm actually surprised that Tanaka doesn't get a really nice last scene that maybe is like they give Magnum at the end. Sorry, we're skipping around, but they give Magnum at the end, they give him his hat, his Detroit Tigers hat. And like, you could have literally just picked up the footage from that episode in season 2 or whatever where Magnum gives him the hat.
Yeah.
And say, and put it in black and white and be like, oh, remember that scene? And now it's, you could do it where you were like at least giving him the ability to take a bow, or you could do a fake flashback to something and use the actor and have a little nice moment. And they're like, no, he's dead. We're never going to see him again. It's like, you didn't let him come out and take a bow. I think that's the problem.
And using one line from early in the episode, you know, it's like the actor is still alive at this point. It's not like you have to reconstruct this.
Yeah. Oh, the fact that
you actually do something.
Yeah, you're right, David. I forgot. They actually do is they reuse his line of dialogue about his nephew Biff going to be a major leaguer, and it's like, no, wrong.
The odds are highly against that.
Yeah,
Lieutenant Tanaka.
And that's like, oh, you know, the thing I remember about Tanaka is he said that thing about his nephew earlier in this episode. No. Come on.
And the thing that annoyed me throughout was, you know, you want to kill off Hawaiian Columbo.
Yeah.
And fine. There's a plot there, fine. But you do it in a way that makes sense for Hawaiian Columbo. We have no sense of him that he's doing a narcotics thing or that he has a history of doing this. He's a homicide detective. Yeah.
Okay, so my pitch is you've got to do it where he asks Magnum for help on a case, and Magnum is helpful, and he tells him a little bit about the case and how it's going a little bit weird, and then he sends Magnum to do a thing, and then he's dead, and Magnum has to figure out, like, and nobody else really knows what was going on, and Magnum has to do this because he's got to close the case for his friend, right? Something like that, where Magnum and Tanaka get to do like one last ride, is kind of what I want emotionally here. It's not what we get.
You do it like a Columbo episode, and he's like, I know this guy did it, I can't quite prove it. And Magnum gives him an idea to try, and Magnum's idea is what winds up getting him killed. Magnum knows the guy who did it,
and
he has to figure it out.
My only note about that is that I'm positive that one of the prompts for this episode is Magnum can't be guilty of it. Like, we don't want Magnum to feel guilty. We don't want it to be that Magnum got him killed. So it's like, all right, well, we can't do that, because I'm pretty sure they didn't want to do that story. Anyway, let's move through this a little bit more. We get his funeral. We meet his sister, who says, I can't believe it was just a simple car wreck. Magnum doesn't believe it. He argues with Paige, but they're all in their suits from the funeral, so it looks like we're in one of Thomas Magnum's 40s flashbacks. Mm-hmm. You know, Paige has got his hat, and Magnum's got his vest and his tie, and it's like...
Did he get a three-piece suit?
At some point, after he died, he really rethought his life. And
You know, I got to start dressing up. They would have buried me in one of those Aloha shirts. That's terrible.
Yeah, and the short shorts. Oh my God, I gotta buy a suit. Just in case I die.
The next time I walk to heaven listening to John Denver, I'm gonna be dressed for the occasion.
So the jerky guy, Clifton, the jerky cop,
the internal affairs cop.
They came back from Tanaka's funeral, and Paige pushes back on Magnum, saying that he doesn't believe it and all that. And he's like, oh, can't get any help now. He essentially says, hey, no favors for you anymore since the guy who liked you died and we just went to his funeral. It's like, what? Oh, what a jerk.
And then Paige keeps doing favors for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the episode.
So Magnum.
I think this is the clunky writing.
Yes.
On this. But yes. I think... Paige is trying to put on a front for the internal affairs guy to think,
yes,
oh yeah, that Magnum, he's a schnook, but I'm really helping him.
Yeah, I just thought that the guy was just such a jerk that it was like breathtaking that like even a bad guy to mock somebody who just came from a funeral about the fact that he can no longer exert any influence in the police department because the decorated police veteran detective was murdered and he was literally at his funeral. Like, who does that? That is, I mean, like, I get that there's trying to be friction there, and that Paige is, you know, and Paige and Magnum later have another scene in the same set where they work against Clifton here. But like, it's just so outrageous. He's essentially just mocking Magnum because Tanaka died. And it's just like, what? Like one of your own fellow officers died? Now, maybe he is suspicious because of the missing cocaine or something. I would also say that all these scenes that take place in the police office are the most baffling of anything in this episode. They're very confusing.
They're almost trying to ape Rockford, Dennis Becker, and Lieutenant Chapman in Rockford Files. It's a similar dynamic. It's a similar antagonism, but it doesn't work. There's no history to it, and there's no connection for these people the way there was on Rockford Files. And that second scene where it's like, oh, well, there's this kilo that was missing, and Magnum goes, oh, no, it's in your desk, remember? And there was the two prostitutes.
Hold on. We'll get there.
Okay. We're still skipping. I'm sorry.
Jumping around.
Yeah.
Dream
you
logic.
You keep trying to take me to other scenes.
Dream logic.
So Tanaka's sister says that that he was sad about a guy, a partner he used to work with, who was killed, and that she was asked to save some of his stuff. Magnum goes to the temple. I hope TC doesn't get brainwashed again and pilot a helicopter over there, because it's the same place, same building.
Well, the curious thing being, Tanaka was going to be buried with his family, but then he bought a crypt at the temple.
Exactly.
And this is bizarre. And as he says himself, this is the one disorderly thing in Tanaka's life.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense.
That's good.
Which that is an interesting detail.
That's a good I watched it twice and noticed this thing observation, David. Well done. Because that's what it had for me was like, what detail did I miss here amid all the boring things? So he goes to the temple and he finds a secret case with a bag of cocaine in it. So, all right, that's something. Interesting.
Sure.
Magnum.
Beautiful scenery. Beautiful shooting.
Yeah. So
bizarre monologue about Aunt Sophie and her parlor.
Uh huh. Magnum finds a photo that is the guy who shot Tanaka's partner. This is the guy who did it, Grady Walker. Magnum goes to and he
looks
was
like looks like a stretched out John Polito.
Yeah, and he was never put away for it because he was checked into a mental institution instead. He was ruled insane and checked into a mental institution. Cut to Magnum posing at the mental institution as a bureaucrat and saying, I need to see Grady Walker, to the doctor who we previously mentioned, previously endorsed.
The Pathmark guy.
Dr. Pathmark.
Yes. It's actually Dr. Hightower, but I prefer Dr. Pathmark. And Magnum is doing his, I need to see him or I could come back with a warrant. He's like, all right, there he is. And
this is the thing that's maddening about Tigers fan, because it's hitting the notes that you want from a Magnum episode. Hey, Magnum's doing the thing where he puts on glasses and pretends to be a bureaucrat and nearly gets caught because, hey, your boss from the attorney general's office is here. Blah, 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 blah. And threatens with warrants, and it should be great, but it's not great.
But it's super boring. And in fact, so here's the thing: given that Dr. Hightower is part of this conspiracy, I really wanted to get a sense that he was put off by being any questions about Grady Walker, and I just don't get it. It feels to me like a very straightforward thing where he would seem nervous and stuff, and it isn't played that way either. So it feels that much more kind of boring. And then the moment where they turn around Grady Walker, and it's like, oh, it's that guy.
You don't look like John totally Polito at all.
No,
and you would think, okay, if you believe this is a bureaucrat. This is a bureaucrat who could theoretically order a fingerprint on the guy.
Yeah.
Have you changed all of the records everywhere for this guy? Probably not.
Yeah,
You've changed one photo in one file.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Phil is exactly right. This is exactly in when they broke it in the writer's room and they've got this approved plot synopsis, however they did it. They're like, yes, this is the scene where this happens. and then it's completely lifeless and just it's not fun. It's not really interesting at all. So also they make the structural error, I would say, of immediately we see Magnum in another in a police records room as another fake person. Conning a records officer so that he can get, he's a writer now. There is a very funny line where he says, I'm a writer for television. He said, well, I used to be, but it was too demeaning. Now I mostly write features. And I thought there, somebody's crying about his life writing television.
Or they're making fun of Tom Selleck leaving them for the bright lights of Lasseter and other motion pictures.
Television is too demeaning, though. I felt like that was either the writer of this episode, Bruce Jervey, or it was the script editor of this episode making fun of Bruce Jervey. One of those. So he does, he makes up some dumb thing about not having a pencil, and she's like, okay, well, as the records officer, I'll just leave you in here while I go get a pencil.
And now, inexplicably, with no setup for this, she goes, well, it's a good thing Lieutenant Page okayed you. And we're when?
Well, that's your
tip off.
That's your tip off that Page is in on all this.
Yeah.
Because again, this should be Magnum hijinks. He's conned someone, and he's pretending to that the jerky internal affairs officer gave him permission to be down there. And but Page vouched for you, so it's okay. And so,
what a relief!
So
he finds a picture of not John Polito, in which we're now calling him the fake Grady Walker in the records group, and he takes it. He stuffs it in his shirt. Very convincing.
Do.
Just stuff it in your mostly half unbuttoned shirt. And he takes it to Higgins, I guess, who confirms that the picture is a fake. He's, oh yes, Magnum, there's a method that we use, and then he blah blah blah, whatever. It's a fake. If you analyze it, it's a fake. And he takes that to Page. Okay.
I did like Higgins' story explaining why he was able to explain why the photo was a fake.
Yes.
That it was about the Albanian
German officer escaping as an Albanian countess, but he looked better than most Albanian countesses.
He was too attractive to be an Albanian countess. And that's a good line.
I imagine that the Albanians were picketing Black Rock in New York for weeks on end.
Again, showing you that this episode is at its best when it's dialogue between regular members of the cast and not really about the plot as much.
Yeah. All I know is King Zog was not pleased.
So, yes, indeed. So back to the cops. Here we go. So Page and there's Clifton, the internal affairs. And he's like, Tanaka signed out 4 keys of high grade blow. Hello, Miami Vice. 3 came back. Magnum says, you locked it in your desk. And Page is like, right. And I swear to God, at this point, Tom Selleck does a John Lovitz, and he goes, that's it. That's the ticket. Yeah,
and,
it's in your
and
desk.
There it is.
Yeah,
two
right.
prostitutes, and they started having a fight.
And you know who was in our Simon and Simon crossover? Morgan Fairchild.
See, I was going for more of a, boy, I really love this old Abbott and Costello.
It is.
Lou, where's my other bag of high-grade blow?
Third base!
The blow's on third!
Oh.
I'm not asking you who's on third.
And it's also incompetent, but it's like, no, where's the cocaine? Oh, it's here. And then what I do like is the IA guy is like, am I supposed to believe that? And he's like, it's a bag. It's got the serial number right on it. You know, and he gives it to him. He's like, shut up. It checks out. So which brings us to our segment. I watched this twice and still don't understand it. Do you? Which is, I feel like the episode wants us to have seen Magnum put the cocaine in Paige's desk. And when he starts to say, it's in your desk, it's like, is it? The last time I saw it, it was in Tanaka's locker at the temple. What happened?
I watched that 4 times because I was like, there is no point where we see this. We have there is no moment.
No!
There is no Chekhov's gun of, here's that connecting moment.
I think in writing classes they should now call this a Cervi's cocaine.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, maybe there's a scene that's missing.
I get the feeling that there was.
There are a lot of scenes that are missing.
This one ran long, and they went choppy, choppy.
It's worse than
how
that.
How did it run long?
It ran long.
Atmospheric montage.
Yeah, it was wrong. It ran long because they kept the montage and cut out parts of the plot instead.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is like the moment where Magnum says it's in your desk. What I wanted from Paige is kind of like a what now? And Magnum is like, it's in your desk, and Paige would be like, oh, it's in my desk, but. But it's not quite that, and we don't know where it is. Why would it be in his? I don't understand, right? And so there's just something. Okay, yeah. So I didn't miss something. I watched it twice, and I don't understand it. You also don't understand it.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Not again. No two plot points in this episode actually connect.
And one more thing, dude. Stay the hell out of my desk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I like the guy gave 26 years to this department. You're not spitting on his grave when I'm here. It's a nice moment. It's also like motivation for Paige in a way that we could have used earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this is when we get it. All right. That brings us to.
Well, the episode is skipping around too.
That brings us to my favorite
just us.
Scene in the entire episode. My favorite. One of my favorite moments in all of Magnum PI.
Interesting.
Which is TC and Thomas are arguing about baseball. Now, let me set the scene for you. Magnum, and this is a new segment I like to call. It's not a new segment. Now, this is a recurring segment we like to call, What Hats Are People Wearing?
It's the hat episode. I
very much liked Thomas's hat in this scene.
I don't. I think it's dumb. He's wearing a white tennis hat. You're Magnum PI, for God's sake. You've got, wear the Da Nang hat, which I don't like, but wear that. Wear the Tigers hat. Wear the Owls muffler hat. Or wear...
It's Little League.
Or I don't know, wear some other dumb hat. I don't care, but a white...
Borrow a hat from Lieutenant Paige.
Yeah.
Give me that fedora.
A white tennis hat. It's dumb. TC, meanwhile, I think they've lost, at this point in season 8, I think they've lost all the last of the Owls Tigers hats. And so TC just has a red hat with a T on it for Tigers.
And on the back it says C. So
later he has... Later he has an outfit that has a thing that says TC... Tigers coach. Which, oh boy.
That cracked me up.
So what I'm saying is I don't like Magnum's hat.
It could also be that the hat wrangler was not brought back after season 7.
No, the hat wrangler died and went to heaven with John Denver's song and didn't come back.
Exactly.
And like early on, I think he is wearing the Detroit Tigers cap, and then they realize, oh, we can't have him wear that until he gets it back from Tanaka's family.
But like, put on another. I don't know. Magnum-mania.com, the official Bible of Magnum podcast, does not mention the white hat, and we've seen it before. But it's a.
I don't think we have.
It's a.
I think it's a new hat.
Is it a reference to Lance White?
I think it is.
He was there in the Tigers hat, and someone on the set said, "Oh, geez, you can't wear this hat because otherwise, we'll have a scene where they give you the Tigers hat, and you'll be." But I already have a Tigers hat.
These are all at the baseball, so they're going to shoot that scene next, right?
And I see them frantically looking amongst the crew. Who's got a hat? And like someone had a dumb white tennis hat and said, "Here's a tennis hat, Mr. Sulik, sir."
If he's the assistant coach of TC's team, shouldn't he have a big dumb T?
Yeah, he should.
But he doesn't.
Yes. Nope.
Okay. Despite the hat malfeasance going on in this scene,
yes, hats aside,
Magnum hats aside. Arguing
Jason,
with yes,
wait, would you describe yourself as a Mad Hatter? Because of this scene.
More, I'm not a Mad Hatter, Phil. I'm a disappointed Hatter. So here it is. And I don't know if Bruce Shervey did this, then good for him. But whoever wrote this dialogue,
it's too well written.
Yeah, I think so. Whoever wrote this dialogue, I love you. TC says to Magnum about the kids on the team. They miss you, Magnum. Interference, bizarre strategy, the arguments. It kills me. The way it's phrased too, the arguments. But
yes.
The bizarre strategy, again, to put it in the list of funny things TC says and the nonsense that he won't abide, the bizarre strategy, because they were arguing about like whether you send the runner from third, which comes back later. I love that. And then Magnum's retort is, I'm sure they're enjoying your management style, dull baseball made boring.
Yeah, that cracked me up.
I love it. It's so great.
I just want
the arguments.
An episode of the two of them arguing baseball.
I wrote that down. I said,
right?
I just want the whole episode to be TC and Magnum bickering while a game goes on in the background. A little league game goes on in the background. That's what I want. They can talk about the balk rule. They can, you know, talk about hats. There'll be a whole part where they're just talking about hats and where do the old hats go and why don't I have a hat? Why do I have this dumb white hat? It'd be great.
No one will be seated during the infield fly rule discussion.
Well, so that scene is great and really funny. Stop.
Yeah.
Jan Hammer time. Here it is.
Hang on. I can't remember this for certain. But I think when we watched it in 1988, my mother scoffed at the infield fly rule because whenever the infield fly rule came up in a Yankees game, she scoffed at it. So I'm pretty sure we had words over the infield fly rule watching this episode.
The Jan Hammer time,
the infield fly rule,
friends, stuff. Is when there is a music video style, languidly edited. Strange, because music videos weren't languidly edited, but it's atmospheric. As I mentioned earlier,
that is a word for it.
Mike Post
it
playing
really
his synth,
is languid,
and then there's the slow guitar that happens. It's that moaning guitar that says bad things are going on in Miami. I mean Honolulu. And what we do is so. This brings us to our next incident of, I watched this twice and don't understand it. Do you? Magnum follows Dr. Hightower.
Yes.
Okay. I don't understand it.
Why?
I was, for a while I thought, is he following the internal affairs guy who's bad? Who? But no, law of conservation of characters, it's the doctor. But again, in that previous scene, I thought it was boring and I thought he showed no signs of being a real suspect. And I don't feel at any point that we're really given that it's gotta all hinge. The fact that this guy did this thing many years ago, if I follow him for a day, he'll lead me right to the drug guys.
No.
They specify in the asylum scene, in the hospital scene, that he was transferred. He was in one asylum and he was transferred to this one. So why couldn't the switch have happened before he was transferred here? Why is this doctor in on it? Why would this doctor have to be in on it at all?
I think in the logic of the episode, it is the only thread Magnum has. So
yes.
He is going to pull on it.
Sure.
But because it happens so late in the episode, and there's no voiceover explaining anything, it looks to be more of a fait accompli. Like Magnum bolts up from his baseball argument with TC and goes, "I've solved the case," and then dashes off to his Ferrari.
Like if the guy,
I'll shoot up a flare. Watch the skies. If I need you, TC, watch the skies. I'll shoot up a flare. No, I'm just gonna follow the grocery store guy.
Again,
there's good bargains to be had at the grocery store.
I don't.
Bananas, 5 for a pound.
I don't.
5 pounds for $1.98.
I don't know.
Pathmark, now through Senate
why
Saturday.
He's. Like, I know he's the only connection, but again, the previous scene doesn't give us any hint that he's at all in continued contact with the very poorly sketched out. Something involving drugs in the scene with no dialogue earlier where Tanaka gets killed. There's not really a big connection here, nor do we get, to Phil's point, the, I know what you're thinking, this seems like a pretty loose thread to be pulling on, but I had a hunch that this guy, it was being, you know, that he was guilty and he was being used for this. And, you know, like, that's all I need. All that's
sometimes
hang a lantern on it.
Wrong. And you go, hey, I need to follow this thread.
So instead, he follows the doctor. Nobody, nobody ever notices that there's a red Ferrari following them around Honolulu.
No.
He drops off a working girl and gives her money. Magnum rolls
well, he picks
in.
Up the working girl.
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, there's a whole thing.
And then he gets to a place before anybody else, which is fun. Then he sees Grady going into the place. Then he sees the doctor and the hooker.
Yep.
Then he drops off the hooker, and Magnum immediately zooms right up.
Yeah.
It's like you're driving a little fast in that
But he's got his entryway. He's got his clues now, and he talks to the girl while wearing his stupid white tennis hat, by the way. A certain working...
That costs extra in some states.
So a certain working girl, he tells Paige on the phone as they dip down the atmospheric music for a moment, told about one big score and a permanent relocation. They're shipping out, but they may not be coming back. Paige is like, oh, I got to get somebody out there. I got to get a warrant. I got to do a thing. And he's like, oh, they're going now. So Magnum hotwires a boat.
And even before this, so he's explaining this, you know, one big score. Why would that conversation even happen? Why would they be talking about that with the doctor? What does that matter?
If the doctor,
it has to happen because the
doctor
wants it to happen.
and the drug kingpin guy were having a conversation and they were having it with the hooker there, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't really follow.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Now, everybody out there, if you do plan a nighttime raid of a drug lord's ship, I hope that the boat that you hotwired has some element of it that has been greased, or that there's grease on board so that you can put some grease on your face, thereby rendering you invisible.
As I understand it, all boats have like a pot of grease right next to the steering wheel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's if they're
properly licensed. Yes.
Yeah.
It's called bilge. Yes.
You never know when you're going to need to lubricate the mainsail.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he hotwires
that's not
the
a
boat,
euphemism.
Puts his grease on his face, because I don't think that really helps, but he does. There's guys on the boat with machine guns, and it's a big boat. Again, hello, Miami Vice. Hello.
I was getting more of a Usual Suspects vibe from the end here, where he was going to come in and look for Kaiser Soze, and then that's the end.
Yeah. Magnum knocks a couple of guys out, throws a guy in the water. The bad guy who killed Tanaka says he's going to drop Hawaii from his route because things have heated up too much, I guess, or something. Hi, guys, says Magnum. What are you, a cop? No, Grady, I'm a friend of one. And then Magnum proceeds to mow a bunch of guys down with a machine gun.
And that was the moment when I thought, oh, this is just the Mac and Ivan episode done really poorly.
Mm-hmm. No regrets or thoughts about the fact that Magnum is fatally shooting all sorts of guys with an Uzi. Which, again, if I had to, and this is just a theory I'm working on, I had to demarcate between what the difference is between an old school, like 70s kind of cop show or detective show and an 80s, machine guns would be the line of demarcation.
Yeah.
In the 70s, guns are single shots and very dangerous, wounding and killing people.
Maybe you got a rifle.
Maybe. In the 80s, everybody's got a submachine gun. They fire them off. Sometimes they kill people. Sometimes they, in the case of the A-Team, they don't ever hit anybody. But either way...
It makes cars flip over, is what guns do.
But like if you think about... And I know it's like Scarface and all of that. Like the whole Miami Vice thing, the idea is these guys are really bad. They don't just have guns. They have machine guns. But to see it in a Magnum P.I. episode and to see Magnum toting the machine gun and just spraying down these guys, these red shirts on the drug boat, is quite a thing to see, given the impact of that single shot in cold blood of Ivan. Yeah. And Did You See the Sunrise?
I think my what the hell moment of this episode was after Magnum kills a lot of people. A lot of people are dead by Magnum's hand.
The one guy he just knocks out and is laying there, but the other guy who he threw in the water, I think probably drowned. And then there's like three or four other henchmen who are just pocked full of bullet holes by Magnum's machine gun.
Spoiler alert, also stretched out John Polito is dead, and Magnum's gun killed him. Yeah,
yeah, with a single shot gun in that case.
But after all that is wrapped up, Magnum is on the pier, and there are cops there, and he goes, okay, thanks, everyone. Yeah. Gotta go now. No!
I'm on a boat with all these dead bodies, and I mean, in my notes I wrote down, now Magnum's all smiles, I guess.
We might have to question you in a couple of days, Magnum, but go home, sleep it off.
Yeah.
You killed a whole bunch of
people. Whole bunch of guys.
You must be tired.
On your own.
I feel so much better.
Yeah, there are no witnesses. You tell us it was a drug deal. Maybe it was your drug deal, Magnum. But, you know, you seem like a nice guy. Go home.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Paige will cover for you. It's fine. And he does say, check out Dr. Hightower at the hospital. Grady couldn't have done it without him. So you will need witnesses for the one thing. Because literally what Paige says to Magnum, I forgot this. Phil, this is to your point. What Paige says to Magnum is, well, we don't have any witnesses because you killed them all, but I'm sure it'll be fine. We don't need witnesses. They're all dead.
who's going to file a complaint, their families? Are they going to go to the Better Business Bureau to say, hey, that's not how you handle a drug deal?
It's all just so dumb.
Yeah. It is atmospherically dumb. Yeah. Which brings us to our final scene. It's baseball time again, and Magnum is there apologizing to TC for not being around. Biff's not there, but Biff comes in. He runs in.
Biff hasn't been playing well. He's been pressing.
Since his uncle died. Sister says he finally let it all out. He was crying, but he really wants to play. TC is wearing his TC Tigers coach shirt. The sister gives Magnum the Tiger's hat that Magnum gave to Tanaka when they first met. There's a hit just like the scenario in the front where Tanaka said, you got to wave him in the opening scene. Magnum waves in Biff and he scores. So the Tanaka rules win one for the team. The team wins. It's a walk-off, folks. Biff scoring the winning run. We hear Tanaka's voice from earlier in the episode saying he's going to play in the majors, a moment that does not really do the job of making us miss Tanaka, I would say.
From earlier in the episode, Jason, or is it Tanaka?
From heaven.
Now that he knows.
The answer is it's not from heaven because no John Denver is playing when we hear that. So we don't. I would like to posit an alternate version of Magnum PI where every time anyone dies, we see them walking into the clouds with John Denver playing.
They're walked off with John Denver, yeah.
So,
Denver is your gateway into the next world.
You get to pick your John Denver song, too.
No.
I mean, you could have Sweet Surrender.
No.
You could have Annie's song if your name is Annie.
It's just the walking into space.
Looking for space.
Or whatever it is. And what's really going to annoy people is that when Magnum kills all those guys, he kills all those guys with a machine gun, they all have to walk into the clouds as a group.
But they're all, because they all died at different points, the song is out of unison.
Yeah.
And it just, the dissonance drives people crazy.
I was going to say, because they died doing evil, they're accompanied by Denver Pile.
Into hell. it's just the hee-hawing sound of Mad Jack, the donkey. That is Tigers fan. They killed Tanaka, you bastards.
I do want to bring up early, about halfway through the episode, I guess, when Magnum goes to visit the sister and Biff is out back and there's that tied up tire and he's pitching, right? He's got a bucket of balls. He's pitching. And if you watch carefully,
in the long shots,
he's pitching and he can't hit the side of the barn.
No. Not even close.
And then they go to a couple of close-ups of the tire, and
then it's
ball
a strike
goes through the tire.
Yep. Yeah, it's hilarious. Wow. Yeah, the kid can't throw. He's like many, many feet off from the tire.
Yeah.
And then we go outside, and then he's doing it perfectly. Kid's going to be the majors.
Oh, crack me.
So, yeah, season eight.
Season eight.
Not a good season.
Bruce Chervey. It's the good housekeeping seal of a bad episode. Written by Bruce Chervey.
And I will also say, I think people working on the show with the idea that they're going to be going, you know, doing something else, right? Like they're on the way to another job. That is a lot of what you get here is you got people who are on their way to another job. I'll call out Jerry Taylor, who is a producer of Magnum PI for this episode. And basically that whole last season, she went on to do a couple other kind of crime shows, and then she ended up on Star Trek and co-created Star Trek Voyager. But this was one of her shows. She did Quincy, Magnum,
she had been on Quincy,
in the Heat of the Night, Jake and the Fat Man, and then she got on the Star Trek train. But it's a last season of a show. Some people are jumping off, some people are jumping on just to get it on their resume for the next job. It's not a very good episode. Bad way to say goodbye to Tanaka.
Chris Abbott is on her way to Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Yeah, I don't honestly entirely remember why I picked this episode as our finale, other than that it does feature a character dying.
I think we sort of wrap up our seasons with death.
With death.
Yeah. With
and
beloved
the,
death.
And the chance for rebirth.
Yeah, exactly. There's no chance for rebirth.
Well, not for Tanaka, but Magnum Podcast will return.
Oh, well, that's good.
I would like to preview, thanks to this episode, I would like to preview a segment for next season of Magnum Podcast. The Rockford Files.
Okay.
I'm hoping to you know, highlight parallels and references and in-jokes to the original show. I'm hoping we get enough fans that they group together and call themselves the Rockford Files.
Is it the Rockford Files or is it Tales from the Tales of the Rockford Files?
That's another segment entirely.
I think it should be called Rockford Filed with a D.
Magnum at theincomparable.com is where you can send your letters. We will be back for a holiday special of some sort. Wait for the holidays.
Watch
for that
the skies.
One. Keep watching the skies.
We'll send up a flare.
We'll send up a flare just like Magnum doesn't in this episode.
Yes. I, Jason, I would like to introduce a final segment in this, what I like to think is a season of segments.
Yes.
For Magnum Podcast. I'd like to do the fitting tribute to Lieutenant Tanaka that they never gave him on the show. Yoshi Tanaka, named after the beloved dinosaur. And I would like to read from the Wikipedia entry for Steve Kemp, Tanaka's favorite baseball player.
Oh, yes, please. Let's do it.
Yes.
In the voice of Michael V. Gazzo. So.
Oh, man. Well, and you won't be able to speak again until the holiday special, so this is going to
exactly.
be good.
Nope, got to go out with a bang. It is 1,168 games over 11 seasons. Steve Kemp posted a 278 batting average with 581 runs, 175 doubles, 25 triples, 130 home runs, 634 RBI, 39 stolen bases, and 576 bases on balls.
It's like he's really here
tribute.
With us.
Oh, man.
Steve Kemp or Michael V. Gazzo?
Steve,
yes.
They're both here with me.
Yes.
You know what Steve Kemp's uncle probably said about him?
Uh-huh.
He's going to play in the majors someday.
He's going to play in the majors someday.
And he was right.
No, that's true. He was an All-American at USC.
So what about Biff?
In the Wikipedia entry.
What about Biff?
Yeah.
What about Biff?
You know, I think that there should be a whole episode of the Incomparables Biff podcast that is about Tanaka's nephew Biff.
Yep. Well, what you should do is take that down, write it on a piece of paper, and throw it at Dan Morin's head.
Put it in a coconut, or just email Biff at theincomparable.com about your Magnum podcast questions while we're gone, and they're going to have to deal with them. So take that.
Exactly.
All right. Well, until we return for our holiday special, whatever it might be, we've seen all of the Christmas episodes of Magnum. There are only two. We've covered them both. So who knows what we'll do. But until then, I think it's time for us to say goodbye. Philip Michaels, David J. Lohr. Bye, guys. Any last words?
It's beginning to look a lot like Magnum.
Steve Kemp was named to the 1979 American League All-Star Team. Can you believe it?
They'll miss you, Magnum Podcast. The incoherence, bizarre segments, the arguments.
Boring show made dull.